Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. There's one man who's done more to bring the cause of whaling to public attention this year. It's not Foreign Minister Murray McCulley. It's not International Whaling Commission Representative Geoffrey Palmer. It's not even anyone from Greenpeace. No, it's Pete Bethune, the sea shepherd who has brought the issue into the spotlight and simultaneously divided public opinion. A green nutter who took the law into his own hands and deserved what he got, or an environmental warrior giving a voice to voiceless animals? Well, judge for yourself, because Pete Bethune joins us now. Pete, thanks very much for taking the time to join us. I imagine that every day, you know, out in the open these days is a good one for you.
Oh, yeah, the smile hasn't left my face since I got back, eh?
What have you been doing? I mean, you know, when we first saw you coming back, you said that you were quite pleased that there weren't any sort of sumo wrestlers fancying you in jail. What have you been doing since you got back?
Pretty much just writing a book. I've got a deadline is Monday next week to get that out to the publishers, and a little bit of media work, and that's been it. Just enjoying being dad again too.
Because I mean, how long from the time that you last left Auckland, how long were you away from?
I was away from New Zealand for 8 months. So there was 3 months in Antarctica and then a full 5 months and locked up a month of that on the Shonomaru, and then 4 months in prison in Japan. So it's been a very long time.
Did you foresee that that was going to happen?
I thought, when I decided to board the boat, I figured they'd take me to Japan and they would deport me under immigration. So maybe a sentence of a week or 2 weeks, but basically kick me out. I knew if they kept me there, it would become a festering sore for them. But what happened in the voyage to Tokyo, it became such a big story in Japan that it became impossible for them to just deport me. It really had to go through the full legal process. So it did surprise me the amount of time I ended up spending in Japan, yeah.
I was going to say, what we saw with those protests outside the court was a face of pro-whaling, pro-nationalist Japan that many people wouldn't have seen before.
Yeah, look, the main proponents of whaling in Japan is this right-wing group that are extremely vocal, but they're a small minority. For most people in Japan, whaling, I'd liken it a little bit like abortion in New Zealand. We know it exists, but for most people here, it's kind of a non-issue. Whaling is the same in Japan, but it's got this small vocal group who are extremely pro-whaling. They're relatively powerful, but a lot of them are older men, and that demographic in Japan is very hard to touch, and certainly young people will never criticise that demographic, and that's why it's a tough industry to stop.
What does it represent to them? Is it about money? Is it about culture? Is it tradition? Is it just the taste of whale meat?
There's a couple of things. One is it is traditional, but that tradition is relatively small. You know, historically they've had coastal whaling, but certainly not the ocean whaling they do now. But the main thing is there's a group of individuals in Japan who make a lot of money out of whaling. It's well supported by the government, and it's well supported by media there. It's this old network of men who an unholy alliance, if you like, who work together and protect the industry. And the average person in the street in Japan doesn't really care about it.
Is there an anti-whaling movement there? Because that was something we saw no sign of. We saw the right-wing protesters, but is there actually...
Yeah, look, I got a number of letters in prison, and pretty much everyone said, don't write back to me. A lot of them were young people, some of them were kids, and said, you know, if you write back and my parents realise that I'm supporting someone who's anti-whaling, it'd look very bad for me. Young people are extremely worried about what older people will think of them. You know, it's a sense of respect for older people and the proper process in that. And it does make it a tough industry to tackle. And certainly the anti-whaling movement is underground in Japan. It hasn't got a strong front on it like the pro-whaling movement has.
There are a couple of Japanese Greenpeace members, aren't there, currently in jail in Japan, is that right?
Yeah, they're not in jail, but they were arrested a couple of years ago, and they've been charged with a series of crimes. And it's a similar case to mine. The charges are relatively minor compared with the fact that this illegal whaling carries on. But the justice system in Japan is so different to here or Australia. It's a very tough industry to get yourself buried inside. Yeah, I was lucky to get out, really.
One thing that helped your case in Japan was Sea Shepherd saying that you'd be banned from future missions on the water, which turned out to be just a legal tactic. Some people thought that was deceitful, that it was wrong to be lying to the court. What do you feel about that?
Look, I, I still don't know really what happened over that. Certainly I wasn't privy to that information in court. When I left Japan, I had my Sea Shepherd sweatshirt turned inside out. You know, I thought I had really been booted out. And then I got back to New Zealand and
that's
was told, you know, hey, no, it's actually, it was done to assist your case. So I don't really know the truth to it. And I don't care really, like I've moved on from that. And, you know, Sea Shepherd's a great organisation, but certainly I think that situation could have been handled a lot better.
Mm. To what extent are you prepared to take the same risks again in terms of your own freedom for what you believe in?
I doubt I would go boarding a Japanese vessel again with the idea of them taking me back to Japan. It's been and done, and it served a purpose. But if I get caught doing anything naughty down there again by the Japanese, I will have to front up and do my 2 years in prison with hard labour in Japan, and that's an unpleasant thought.
You're one of the few people that knows what happened when the two boats collided.
Mm-hmm. We were nearly out of fuel. We'd been following the Nishinmaru for a number of hours, but we're nearly out of fuel. We waved goodbye to the Bob Barker, and I told my driver, Jason, to stop the boat. The Shonamara at this stage is about 2 miles astern of us. They changed the direction and came kind of towards us, but it looked like they were going to pass about 30 metres to our port side. Now, from a legal perspective, we have right-of-way because they're the port side vessel. We have right-of-way because they're the overtaking vessel. They hit us with water cannons and LRADs. Now, Jason, my guy who's driving, he looks out the window and he sees these guys out on the port side and he decides to turn to starboard to try and get a bit of distance between them and us. As he does so, the Shonanmaru turns sharply to starboard, and because they're going a lot faster than us, they ended up effectively cutting us in half.
Right.
And this will, the maritime safety, I met with them last week, and that is what the report will say. It will clearly say that we had right of way and their vessel was the one doing the dangerous manoeuvres. We were basically stationary in the water until the very last instant of the collision.
And you wouldn't have been able to get out of the way if you'd wanted to?
If we had have reversed, we could have gotten out of the collision. But when you're being hit with a water cannon, my driver couldn't see what was going on. He made his decision at the time, and you know, if they hadn't hit us with the water cannons and LRADs, we would have been able to communicate and say, hey, put it in reverse. But you know, that didn't happen in the accident. You know, collision was the result, and a you know, amazing boat is now stuck in the bottom of Antarctica.
And an amazing boat that had a significant, I mean, significant memories for you for other reasons as well.
Oh, look, it's an incredible boat, and it's been my life for 4 years. It broke my heart to see that boat go down. Yeah.
That's the Maritime Safety Authority report. That's
Maritime Safety New Zealand. They struggled getting information out of Japan, actually. The Japanese refused to hand anything over. But I did manage to bring some information back that was used in the prosecution of myself that has been helpful to them. And they will produce a full report, I believe.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when that report comes out, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be. Although it's kind of, it's irrelevant now. You know, it's too late for any prosecution to be done in New Zealand. There's a six-month time window on that. And for you to try and prosecute in Japan, almost impossible. My defence was $500,000 and we barely scratched the surface and pleaded guilty, basically.
When you came back, I mean, you spoke out and said that the New Zealand government hadn't done that much to help you. John Key remarked that you were ungrateful. Did you expect the government to do more?
No, my comment was how the government had deserted me. On the day of the collision, Murray McCulley said to me, he said to the press, he said, what did they expect when they went down there looking to kill people? Secondly, John Key likened me to someone importing drugs into New Zealand from overseas and being caught and put in prison. In terms of my trial, I never expected them to assist the trial, but I did expect them to remain vocal against whaling. And we have gone soft on that relative to Australia.
I was going to say, this was at a time when the government was looking at some sort of removal of the moratorium, sanctioning limited commercial whaling, so probably not the best week or month for you to be doing this.
Yeah, that's right. And look, I believe we should be with Australia on this. They've decided to take Australia to the International Court of Justice. We should be standing there beside them, not leaving them out on a limb like this.
Why is it? I mean, you've been very vocal about biodiesel in the past, alternative fuels. I mean, you've got a background. You've started working in oil fields in Libya, in oil exploration. Why whaling now?
I had the boat. I've always been a conservationist, and it was the opportunity to go down and add some value to the whaling, anti-whaling movement. But, you know, I'm a conservationist in many areas, and it was just that the opportunity to do something about whaling fell into my lap. There's many other things I care about too.
Just finally, I've got to ask you before we have to go. There's another media angle on this that I don't think people are all that aware of, and that's Whale Wars, which is on the Animal Planet channel. Have you been watching that?
I've seen episode 6 and 7, and 6 is the one with the collision, and episode 7 is the aftermath of that. It's a big show in the States. I don't think
it seems to be getting quite a following.
In the States, it's enormous. Yeah, massive. I think we're on the Jay Leno show in a couple of weeks there. You know, that's
Is that on Sky here?
Is it? Yeah. It is. Fantastic. It should be on Animal Planet. I need to check that out.
I think they're screening either the first or second series now. Series 3 will screen either late this year or early next year in New Zealand. But in the States at the moment, it is a massive show.
Complete the following sentence. Just finally, you will next be in the headlines for.
I got no idea, mate.
Who knows?
Who knows what I've been the headlines for?
All right. Thank you very much.
Probably the maritime safety report, I imagine.
Thank you very much for coming and joining us, Pete.
No worries, brother. All good.
That's Pete Bethune. After the break, Michael Field on his years in the Pacific and Greg Fleming on an album that took years.